Alrighty, everyone, hello, and welcome back to the Reformed Dissenters. We are back once again. It's been a long time, almost a month and a half. I'm Bruce Johnson, joined by my brother Jacob Johnson.
Hello, everybody.
And
it's been too long.
It's been way too long. You are listening to the show where Reformed Christians dissent against popular ideas of culture by asserting a biblical worldview, and we haven't been doing that. At least recording us doing that in a while. So, but here we are. We're back, and we're very excited to be back. This is our current events Wednesday. Friday, we're mixing things up. In case you missed our social media announcement, you should definitely follow us there. But we're mixing things up. So we're not doing our literature episodes on Wednesday anymore. We've shuffled everything forward a little bit so that we get a break on Sunday, because that's always nice, right? Especially for a Christian show. But we are now going to be discussing our literature episodes, our literature stuff on Friday. And Wednesday now, which is when you're listening to us, is when we are talking about current events. And we have quite the event to discuss today. So, lots to get into. There was a new running mate kerfuffle. Is that the best word, Jake?
Running mate drama. Yeah, kerfuffle. Yes. Kerfuffle defines it quite well.
Yeah. So lots to break down there. We're actually going to have a discussion at the end of the episode today. We're going to do things a little bit differently, just because, yes, it's a very interesting topic, but it's not exactly something where it needs a theological wrap-up per se. So we've decided, in lieu of that, to do a theological discussion. And our discussion is called, Does the Bible Care About How We Structure Our Civil Governments? So talking about history, talking about American history specifically, and the history of Israel, actually. And this is kind of sparked on by quite a few discussions I've had recently by several people in the area. And it's got my brain going, and I figured, Jake, why don't I get you, like, just, you know, ranting about the same topics? So here we go. But before,
I don't know if I'm necessarily all that well informed. We can definitely discuss, but don't take my word as absolute truth.
You can be the guinea pig for the audience. I have basically just a series of questions that I want to ask and just discuss. I have some quotes. Gary DeMar wrote an excellent book called God and Government, 3-volume series. Actually, it's not just one book. We read through the first 2 volumes 2 years ago on the show. But I pulled in some quotes from there that I thought were actually really, really good. So I'm going to pull that in as well. But before we get into all of that, talking about our current events, our theological discussion, we have to do what we always do, which is talk about our verse of the week. Our passage this week is Psalm chapter 9, verses 7 and 8. And this passage says, "But the Lord sits enthroned forever. He has established his throne for justice, and he judges the world with righteousness. He judges the peoples with uprightness." Again, that's Psalm 9, 7 through 8. Shockingly, who would have thought this is actually going to play into our discussion at the end of the episode? How about that? I'm going to take the first part of this, which is talking about kingly, very kingly language, right? The Lord sits enthroned forever. He's established his throne for justice, judges the world with righteousness, judges the peoples with uprightness. And part of the thing I want to discuss later today, which is why I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this verse, is when we say that God is king, does that, and this is purely a question, I actually want an answer, not right now, but later. When we say that God is king, are we saying that there are now allowed to be kings under him? And if so, what does that mean? What does that look like? How much power and authority do they have? Are they allowed to do that? Is that something that is okay, right? And I think this is something we can discuss later today. Several people have said yes. I've actually made the case for no, right? Not a kingly reign, but a legislative body of divided powers that don't cancel each other out, but make it harder to get things done, which is kind of the point, right? That's why our founding fathers created the civil government they did, was so that things, you know, they tyrannical laws wouldn't get passed immediately, right? It's meant to be slow. So we're going to discuss all those things later. But all of that is derived from the idea that, that Christ is king right now. He is enthroned forever. He has established his throne for justice, right? Are we ever going to find an earthly person who is as just as Christ is, as God is? No. There's no one who can be trusted with that level of power to act justly, in a just way, to care about and love his people as much as Christ does, as much as God does, to care about justice as much as God does, to be someone who is uncorruptible, incorruptible. That doesn't exist. And so we're going to discuss more of those things at the end of the episode. But for now, let's kick off this discussion about VP running mates in this very tumultuous election cycle. Jake, what the heck is going on?
Yeah, and I hope I can put this, go back to the way I was doing it before we took that long break. And so hopefully I can go straight back into what I was doing before. But today, I want to talk about something that, you know, we haven't really talked about on this show, and that's kind of like independent candidates. So I know with all of the election talk ramping up, it's been ramping up for close to half a year now. But I think what we haven't talked about specifically on the show is kind of the independent candidate that is slipping through and is kind of becoming a bigger thing. And that is Robert F. Kennedy. And he has recently announced his running mate for his campaign. And he's going to announce it, but kind of at this point, he's already come out and said, I pretty much know who I'm choosing. So he's basically chosen already at this point. But March 26th is at a speech he's going to be giving, he's going to be announcing who his running mate is. So technically, right now, it is not chosen. However, he's said a lot that this is the person he thinks he's going to go with. And sadly, it is much worse than we had first thought. This is a debate, or not debate, but drama that has been going on for a little bit over a week now. And so this whole conversation of who his running mate is going to be has gone through a lot of the different media sources. And so, especially with one of his running mates, or possible choices of a running mate, being Aaron Rodgers, the current NFL quarterback of the New York Jets. Yes, a football player. And yeah, the other one is Jesse Ventura, who is a former governor of Minnesota. And so with that, I want to take a second to discuss the two people that that are at the top of his list, as he said. Now, let's take a second. So Aaron Rodgers is a prominent name, especially in the football spheres. I don't know if our audience at all are into football. But I know
if you're not, at least one of us is not, and one of us is, you can guess who.
However, Aaron Rodgers is a prominent name and is a big supporter of Robert F. Kennedy. Aaron Rodgers is very outspoken in the NFL and also outside of it. He is actually known as a person who puts up controversial things that he talks about. And I know personally that he is banned from multiple talk shows because of the things that he talks about, being something that not a lot of people like. However, a good point that is made is that Aaron Rodgers is kind of like coming straight out of the NFL and then possibly becoming the vice president if he's just running with RFK. Again, that's assuming RFK goes into and actually becomes a president, which is highly, highly unlikely. However, if that were to happen, a lot of people are like, wait a second, Is he going to be able to run anything? Is he going to be able to, like, that's just, like, you're thrown right into it without any knowledge of any of this going on. Is that a good or a bad thing? I know Bruce has a point, to that.
The whole thing is just, it's ridiculous because this is something where everyone knows independents have a ridiculously low shot of actually winning.
Yeah.
But they run anyways to prove a point, right? Basically, right?
If you think about it, it's not a two-party system. Yeah.
They're kind of running to say, hey, neither party is what we're looking for right now. This is the better alternative or a better alternative. And we need to ditch this two-party system because it's been controlling things long enough. I mean, I'm in favor of that. You know, like, I really think we need to break this up more. But if you're going to run that way, you got to stick to your principles because that's all you've got. That's all that that is. Like, you can't play games because you have to know you're probably not going to win this time. But if you actually stick to your principles and you actually take it seriously and show to people that you're taking it seriously, you're not just playing the game. That is all you're good for, really. And so
now,
what this tells me is he's just not taking it seriously. This is a
how would this, and this is my question, how would this not be taking it seriously?
Because there are tons of other people who are already fighting the fight who he could select if he were serious.
Yeah. To mention Mike Rowe being one of them, I do not have this in my notes, but I was recently hearing something that Mike Rowe was also a possible candidate. And for those who don't know, Mike Rowe is a very good and prominent person and would be great in this position.
What did he call it? Tough Jobs? Was that his... was literally, you know, his whole thing is people need to work with men, especially need to work with their hands, right? Like, he started this school for men to teach them the trades. He has this show, I think he calls it Tough Jobs, I think is the name of his show, where he's going around the country to all these tough, you know, oil drilling wells and, you know, farmers and, you know, all these things, you know, showing, hey, this is like manly work, you know, like that's his whole thing. I mean, that's considerably better. Like, he actually stands for something, has put his money, his time on the line for this, you know?
Yeah. So, I to add to this conversation, I know it's been mentioned before. I know I've heard definitely the arguments of people against Aaron Rodgers. I just wanted to bring another side to this. The fact that I think there's a little bit of a stigma, and it's not straight across the board, right? But, like, that football players are dumb, right? And wouldn't be able to run or do this. I do want to bring a fact to this so that we're not talking about this uninformed. The very fact that football players, in order for them to make it into the NFL, they have to go through college. They have to go through college football. In order for them to stay in college football, they need to, and I think the majority of college makes them have a 3.75 GPA while they're going through college. If they don't get that, they are kicked out of college. So in a sense, we can't necessarily call them dumb for the most part. I do think there are some. Yeah. And to add to that as well, another point, there is an actual quarterback in the NFL currently who used to work at NASA before coming to the NFL.
Wow. I don't think stupidity, you raise a really good point. In my mind, it's not stupidity or intellect per se.
Right.
There may be nothing wrong with Aaron Rodgers as Aaron Rodgers. Now, he needs to be Christian, obviously, but RFK isn't, so we're not endorsing him either. But what we're debating here is whether this was a wise choice or whether this was just a publicity stunt. And in my mind, this is just a publicity stunt because regardless of whether or not Aaron Rodgers is intelligent or whatever, not, you know, I think that there are tons of other people he could have chosen if he were actually serious about this.
Yeah.
And he did, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. So On the other hand, I want to take a moment to speak about Jesse Ventura before I go into how this gets worse. Jesse Ventura is a former governor of Minnesota and would be familiar with the political landscape unlike Aaron Rodgers. He is very outspoken about not supporting the red and blue party system. That's actually how RFK chose him as one of the possible running mates, is that Jesse Ventura put out a post saying that he didn't want to support the Republicans or the Democrats, that he wanted an independent person to run for office. And, you know, there already were. And he mentioned RFK and two other people running on the independent ticket. So then RFK then was like, oh, maybe this guy would be good for to be the VP. So, oh, sorry, not VP, but his running mate. And, you know, his politics are decent. Again, I think I would put him on the same par as RFK as to what he thinks politically. If our audience doesn't know what RFK believes, I think some notable points is the fact that he is very, very outspoken about the vaccines and says that they're bad and wrong. Yeah. Yes. And he even goes so far as to say that any vaccine is wrong and bad. So he's, if you're talking about an anti-vaxxer, he is that. Which to note, and this is good going forward for another piece that we're going to be talking about, is that this whole like subgroup of people that are anti-vaxxers, they have named themselves anti-vaxxers and they are technically anti-vaxxers. And that's kind of like the position that says we don't like the COVID vaccine. We don't, you know, we think this is bad. And not to say that they're completely anti-vaxxers, but that's just kind of like, that's that side, right? So if I refer to them as anti-vaxxers, I'm not trying to give them a demonstrative name. I'm not trying to put them down. Yeah. So it's just to refer to them as a group of people. So nothing too special about Jesse Ventura, aside from the fact I know there are some people that have grievances about him and his personality and how he works with others being a little bit of an issue. However, I think that's not necessarily important right now. So now to the final for the final reveal, RFK chose to be his running mate. Neither of these two options. So basically, this entire episode was worthless. But he decided on Nicole Shanahan. Nicole Shanahan is a wealthy attorney from California. She is so much worse than the last two options. She is liberal, Democratic on every issue, not even the vaccines. She is worse than RFK on the vaccines. So why would he choose her? I think the main issue to talk about this is she was chosen for the money. She is rich, right? She has a lot of money, and she paid for his Super Bowl ad that went out during the Super Bowl. All comes back to football, huh? But she is so much worse. And I think the biggest point is that she doesn't even agree with RFK on these issues.
So that was a bribe, basically.
Yeah, yeah. I think Robert F. Kennedy has certain stances on abortion that restrict it a little bit, but he's certainly not as far as get rid of Roe v. Wade. I think he would say, no, we should go back to keeping Roe v. Wade. We should have had Roe v. Wade. However, but she isn't even no restrictions at all. That's what she would have. So on every single thing, she's nothing like RFK. To bring this all together, I think the point of this episode, aside from just spilling drama, is the fact that Sadly, the Independent Party is just as worse as the Democratic or Republican parties. And we should have already known this. I mean, why do we think that in a world where mutilating men's and women's bodies is the norm, why do we think then that we can find a candidate or running mate that is any good?
Yep.
I mean, why is it a thought that we could get anybody who could be decent to be president when our culture is destroyed? When there's nobody in the culture to even be a decent president.
Right.
So I think that's what I'll end that there.
Yeah. 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 It's crazy because, you know, so many people look to RFK Jr. because he was saying things that they liked about COVID, about the border, about, you know, he went down to the border when nobody else would, you know, like he was, and it was like, wow, does this mean the left is finally seeing sense? And now we're realizing, and God is waking us up and smacking us on the face and saying, wake up, yeah. You fools. You think anyone's going to have sense apart from me? Like, you cannot have wisdom apart from the fear of the Lord. Why? Because the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, right? That's where wisdom starts. So you can't have wisdom if you don't go to the starting place of wisdom. That's not how that works. So, anyways, moving on to our discussion today, this does relate. I promise I'm not shoehorning something in here. I think this is a good discussion to have, but I think also, as we look for other opportunities, and maybe opportunities is the wrong word, but we look for ways to transform society as Christians, one of the things we can't neglect is reasserting a biblical view of everything. And I think we have, at least in a lot of circles, neglected that in terms of the civil government. Largely, today, in so many Christian circles, we're relying and falling back on pragmatism. We're being pragmatic. And we're saying, well, I think it would be better if it were this way. In today's discussion, I think it would be better to consolidate power. Huh. Because if we consolidate power, it could be more easily wielded. Right? No, that's a fair argument. Right. If I were using earthly human terms and I weren't referencing the Bible, I could make a pretty strong case for monarchy or some other form of civil government.
In a sense, though, don't we already technically have a monarchy?
No. Well,
is the king. One king.
Right.
But then he gives it out to all of the lords and the dukes and all these other smaller politicians that then run it for him. Right?
Well, yes. Yes. In that way, yes. Ultimately it's a monarchy, but who's the king? Right? So this is a good opening to our discussion. I want to start out though. We're discussing, does the Bible care about how we structure our civil governments? My first question is, are there some forms of civil government that are wrong? Why are they wrong? So, I'll open up the floor. Are there some forms of civil government you can think of, Jake, that are wrong, that are just straight out wrong, that we can identify as being wrong, and we can identify because Scripture would go against that?
Anarchy. Anarchy. In a sense, that's not a form of government, but yeah, it technically is, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And why is that wrong?
Because it's just, in a sense, it would be the opposite of what we're discussing here. Like, we don't think monarchy is good, but monarchy is saying we're going to delegate all of the power to one person. Anarchy is saying we're going to separate the powers and everyone is going to have a tiny bit of that power.
Right.
And now you have chaos.
Little small g gods running all over the place, destroying things.
And then I think what's kind of like in the middle there is the republic, One that is run by...
Which we're going to get to.
Yeah, go ahead.
Democratic Republic, yeah. So, okay, yeah, so there's that. I think we could make the case that a biblical version of an aristocracy is wrong, right? If you think about it, having a ruling class of people that are there at the top with no, like a caste system, right?
Yeah.
With no ability for any sort of movement out or into that class.
Yeah.
And giving those people ultimate power to oppress everyone below them, I believe is biblically wrong. And I think you can back that up, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's there,
and that's sure a communistic. That's a communistic system as well.
A dictatorship, same deal.
Yeah.
Right. Now there is a difference between a monarchy and a dictatorship, and we can get to that a little bit later. But I would say that a dictatorship. Look at King Nimrod. Look how that ended, right? That I would argue that was a dictatorship. Okay. So moving on. We don't have a lot of time. Wow, this is a great discussion already. So my next question is: what are some examples of biblical civil government? And here I'm explicitly talking about acceptable forms of civil government condoned by Scripture. Okay? This could be at any point in history. At a certain point, what was condoned by Scripture? I list three.
I would say a judge system.
Yeah, and I would put that actually under maybe that's a subheading under Democratic Republic. Because the judges were still selected by the people, I believe.
For the most part, aside from Aaron.
Yeah. Sure. There were some that were appointed, but largely there was still that they would vote for those people. Yeah. So another one is a theocracy. Literally, Israel's earliest days, God was, fully in charge, especially pulling them out of the exodus, especially the exodus pulling them out of Egypt. I'm the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. He did that. He led them. He gave them the law. He was the one who was ruling directly, and they could see that. So theocracy, Democratic Republic, Exodus 18 talks about it. That's what Israel was. Israel was a democratic republic first. After they were a theocracy, then they got diluted. Then they became people who wanted to be more and more like the people around them, right? And so God handed them over to a king. Now, God was the one who handed them over to the king. He said, let them do it. And then we get King David. And it seems like, maybe this is a viable option. He's a man after God's own heart. How can a man after God's own heart be a king if being a king is acceptable in the eyes of God? Right? Is not acceptable in the eyes of God. So clearly, at some point in history, a monarchy was acceptable to God for at least one person and several others throughout the following books, the Book of Kings, where First and Second Kings, where we learn, good kings, bad kings, etc., right? But I think Gary DeMar makes a really good point when he says King David was used to typify, he was a type of Christ, the true king. He was a shadow pointing to Christ, the true king, much like sacrificing lambs on an altar pointed to the death of Christ. Do we sacrifice lambs on an altar today? No, why not? Because we have the perfect and true fulfillment in Christ, right? Zechariah 9:9, Matthew 21:5. Both of those passages talk about not looking forward to an earthly king, but it specifically says your king is Christ. That's your king.
So your argument is that along with the ceremonial laws, Christ was the one and true king, so monarchy is no longer needed.
I would say yes.
Which I don't disagree with. I personally think that that's a great argument. I would have it, and you did back it up with biblical proof, and I think that's very interesting. And I never thought of it like that necessarily. I always, in a sense, my thought always was, a monarchy as possible. You could do it biblically, but the way the American government was set up was kind of the strongest of them all. Almost like when you start a new country, you have the selector of like you can choose this type of government or this type of government or this type of government. All of them can be done biblically. But that's interesting to say that monarchy is completely from a biblical perspective off the table.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I'll wrap up with this. Gary DeMar quotes this on, let's see, what page is this? Page 89 in his book, God and Government, Volume 1. He has a chapter called The Biblical Form of Civil Government. I wonder why my eyes went right there. He said...
No correlation at all.
I don't know. Yeah, no idea. He said, quote, "The king typified the coming king, Jesus Christ. God raised up a king in Israel for the people to have an earthly representation of their true king who was to come. Their true king was coming to them." Zechariah 9:9, Matthew 21:5. "The rule of earthly kings is temporary, while the rule of Christ is eternal." Going down a little bit further, he says, "Therefore, the kingship of Israel was fulfilled in Jesus Christ, and we no longer seek to establish earthly kings." End quote. And so he spent the whole rest of that chapter backing that up, and I thought he did a really good job talking about why earthly kings is not something that's condonable by Scripture today. To give that amount of authority to a single person and to call that good and acceptable, right? I could argue from almost any level, right? But I am going to argue from the perspective of Exodus chapter 18, which Exodus chapter 18 lays out a system of government that our founding fathers used to create this nation today. And I would argue that that's the biblical version. Now, we're unfortunately out of time, but Jake, if you have any final thoughts before we...
I think definitely something that I want to say is that, like, as like the representative of the audience here, I definitely, like, I agree, and you've convinced me. So now it's time for me to go hear the other arguments so I can figure out fully. Because, like, always, like, hearing only one side of it is like, oh, wow, that sounds great. And then you hear the other side and you're like, oh, dang it, that's better. and then you come back to the other side and you're like, oh, now I have an understanding of it.
Yes, yes.
So absolutely. I definitely think, go out, do your research, Mr. Audience members.
Well, and I was actually talking to a friend of mine here in Moscow, Moscow, Idaho, who is a monarchist and is actually a very interesting conversation. And I think at one point in the conversation, he said he might be interested in coming on the show and chatting sometime. So we might have to make that happen one of these days.
I'll be the person in the middle.
That's right.
Getting this debate, nice. Keeping this debate on
moderator.
Track. Yes.
Very cool. Well, we hope you enjoyed this episode. We're excited to be back. Very excited. We are starting our brand new book on Friday. Check it out. It's right behind me. Public Stoning. That's right. Public Stoning, God's Design for a Nation Without Prisons by Adam Terrell. If you want copies of this book for yourself, you should reach out to us, trdshow@protonmail.com. And we'll see if we can get you some of those. You can also get the audiobook on Audible. And we are actually going to have Mr. Terrell himself on the show in a few weeks. He's a local here in Moscow, Idaho. And I met him a couple weeks ago, and we've been meeting up every week and just chatting. And he's a great, great guy. And he actually gave us several copies of his book so that we could review them. He's not sponsoring us. That's purely where it ends. He just gave us the books, and here we are. So tune in on Friday to hear. Yeah, Jake's like, so we'll see what happens. Tune in on Friday to hear us break down the introduction in chapter 1. We are very, very excited. So Public Stoning by Adam Terrell. Till then, remember everyone, have a great rest of your week. And in all that you do, do it as unto the Lord.